Hey, Keaton. We're starting chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, called The Rogue Bludger. Since the disastrous episode of the Pixies, Professor Lockhart had not brought live creatures to class. Instead, he read passages from his books to them and sometimes reenacted some of the more dramatic bits. He usually picked Harry to help him with these reconstructions. So far, Harry had been forced to play a simple Transylvanian villager whom Lockhart had cured of the babbling curse. A yeti with a head cold, and a vampire who had been unable to eat anything except lettuce since Lockhart had dealt with him. Harry was hauled to the front of class during their very next Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson, this time acting as a werewolf. If he hadn't had a very good reason for keeping Lockhart in a good mood, he would have refused to do it. "Nice loud howl, Harry, exactly, and then, if you'll believe it, I pounced like this, slammed him to the floor, and thus, and with one hand I managed to hold him down, with my other I put my wand to his throat. I then screwed up my remaining strength and performed the immensely complex homorphous charm. He let out a piteous moan. Let go, Harry. Go on, Harry, higher than that. Good. The fur vanished, the fangs shrank, and he turned back into a man. Simple, yet effective. And another village will remember me forever as the hero who delivered them from the monthly terror of werewolf attacks." The bell rang and Lockhart got to his feet. "Homework, compose a poem about my defeat of the Wagga Wagga werewolf. Sign copies of Magical Me to the author of the best one." The class began to leave. Harry returned to the back of the room, where Ron and Hermione were waiting. "Ready?" Harry muttered. "Wait till everyone's gone," said Hermione. "All right." She approached Lockhart's desk, a piece of paper clutched tightly in her hand, Harry and Ron right behind her. "Professor Lockhart," Hermione stammered, "I wanted to get this book out of the library, just for background reading." She held out the piece of paper, her hand shaking slightly. "But thing is, it's in the restricted section of the library, so I need a teacher to sign for it. I'm sure it would help me understand what you say in Gadding with Ghouls about slow-acting venoms." "Ah, Gadding with Ghouls," said Lockhart, taking the note from Hermione, and smiled widely at her. "Possibly my very favorite book. You enjoyed it?" "Oh, yes," said Hermione eagerly. "So clever, the way you trapped that last one with a tea strainer." "Well, I'm sure no one will mind me giving the best student of the year a little extra help," said Lockhart warmly, and he pulled out an enormous peacock quill. "Yes, nice, isn't it?" he said, misreading the revolted look on Ron's face. "I usually save it for book signings." He scrawled an enormous loopy signature on the note and handed it back to Hermione. "So, Harry," said Lockhart, while Hermione folded the note with fumbling fingers and slipped it in her bag. "Tomorrow's the first Quidditch match of the season, I believe. Gryffindor against Slytherin, is it not? I hear you're a useful player. I was a seeker, too. I was asked to try for the national squad, but prefer to dedicate my life to the eradication of the dark forces. Still, if you ever feel the need for a little private training, don't hesitate to ask. Always happy to pass on my expertise to less able players." Harry made an indistinct noise in his throat and then hurried off after Ron and Hermione. "I don't believe it," he said, as the three of them examined the signature on the note. "He didn't even look at the book we wanted." "That's because he's a brainless git," said Ron. "But who cares, we got what we wanted." "He's not a brainless git," said Hermione shrilly, as they half ran toward the library. "Just because he said you were the best student of the year." They dropped their voices as they entered the muffled stillness of the library. Madame Pince, the librarian, was a thin, irritable woman who looked like an underfed vulture. "Most potent potions?" she repeated suspiciously, trying to take the note from Hermione, but Hermione wouldn't let go. "I was wondering if I could keep it," she said breathlessly. "Oh, come on," said Ron, wrenching it from her grasp and thrusting it at Madame Pince. "We'll get you another autograph. Lockhart will sign anything if it stands still long enough." Madame Pince held the note up to the light as though determined to detect a forgery, but it passed the test. She stalked away between the lofty shelves and returned several minutes later, carrying a large and moldy-looking book. Hermione put it carefully into her bag and they left, trying not to walk too quickly or look too guilty. 5 minutes later, they were barricaded in Moaning Myrtle's out-of-order bathroom once again. Hermione had overridden Ron's objections by pointing out it was the last place anyone in their right minds would go, so they were guaranteed some privacy. Moaning Myrtle was crying noiselessly in her stall, but they were ignoring her, and she them. Hermione opened most potent potions carefully, and the three of them bent over the damp, spotted pages. It was clear from a glance why it belonged in the restricted section. Some of the potions had the effects almost too gruesome to think about, and there were some very unpleasant illustrations which included a man who seemed to have turned inside out, and a witch sprouting several extra pairs of arms out of her head. "Here it is," said Hermione excitedly, as she found the page headed "The Polyjuice Potion." It was decorated with drawings of people halfway through transforming into other people. Harry sincerely hoped the artist had imagined the looks of intense pain on their faces. "This is the most complicated potion I've ever seen," said Hermione, as they scanned the recipe. "Lacewood, flies, leeches, fluxweed, and not grass." She ran her finger down the list of ingredients. "Well, they're easy enough. They're in the student store cupboard. We can help ourselves. Oh, look. Powdered horn of bicorn. Don't know where we're going to get that. Shredded skin of boomslang. That'll be tricky, too. Of course, a bit of whoever we want to change into." "Excuse me," said Ron sharply. "What do you mean, a bit of whoever we're changing into? I'm drinking nothing with crab's toenails in it." Hermione continued as though she hadn't heard him. "We don't have to worry about that yet, because we don't add those bits until last." Ron turned speechless to Harry, who had another worry. "Do you realize how much we're going to have to steal, Hermione? Shredded skin of boomslang? That's definitely not in the student's cupboard. What are we going to do, break into Snape's private store? I don't know if this is a good idea." Hermione shut the books with a snap. "Well, if you two are going to chicken out, fine," she said. There were bright pink patches on her cheeks, and her eyes were brighter than usual. "I don't want to break the rules, you know. I think threatening Muggleborns is far worse than brewing up a difficult potion. But if you don't want to find out if it's Malfoy, I'll go straight to Madame Pince now and hand the book back in." "I never thought I'd see the day when you'd be persuading us to break the rules," said Ron. "All right, we'll do it. But not toenails, okay?" "How long will it take to make, anyway?" asked Harry, as Hermione, looking happier, opened the book again. "Well, since the fluxweed has got to be picked at the full moon, and the lacewings have got to be stewed for 21 days, I'd say it'll be ready in about a month if we can get all the ingredients." "A month," said Ron. "Malfoy could have attacked half the Muggleborns in the school by then." But Hermione's eyes narrowed dangerously again, and he added swiftly, "But it's the best plan we've got, so full steam ahead, I say." However, while Hermione was checking that the coast was clear for them to leave the bathroom, Ron muttered to Harry, "It'll be a lot less hassle if you can just knock Malfoy off his broom tomorrow." Harry woke early on Saturday morning and lay for a while while thinking about the coming Quidditch match. He was nervous, mainly at the thought of what Wood would say if Gryffindor lost, but also at the idea of facing a team mounted on the fastest racing brooms gold could buy. He never wanted to beat Slytherin so badly. After half an hour lying there with his insides churning, he got up, dressed, and went down to breakfast early, where he found the rest of Gryffindor team huddled at the long, empty table, all looking uptight and not speaking much. As 11 o'clock approached, the whole school started to make its way down to the Quidditch Stadium. It was a muggy sort of day with a hint of thunder in the air. Ron and Hermione came hurrying over to wish Harry good luck as he entered the locker rooms. The team pulled on their scarlet Gryffindor robes, and then sat down to listen to Wood's usual pre-match pep talk. "Slytherin has better brooms than us," he began. "No point denying it. But we've got better people on our brooms. We've trained harder than they have. We've been flying in all weathers."
"Too true," muttered George Weasley.
"I haven't been properly dry since August."
"And we're going to make them rue the day they let that bit of slime, Malfoy, by the way, onto their team."
Chest heaving with emotion, Wood turned to Harry.
"It'll be down to you, Harry, to show them that a seeker has to have something more than a rich father. Get to that snitch before Malfoy or die trying, Harry, because we've got to win today. We've got to."
Wow, I totally botched that accent.
"So no pressure, Harry," said Fred, winking at him.
As they walked out on the pitch, a row of no's greeted them, mainly cheers because Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff were anxious to see Slytherin beaten. But the Slytherins in the crowd made their boos and hisses heard, too. Madam Hooch, the Quidditch teacher, asked Flint and Wood to shake hands, which they did, giving each other threatening stares and gripping rather harder than was necessary. "On my whistle," Madam Hooch said. 3, 2, 1. With a roar from the crowd to speed them upward, the 14 players rose toward the leaden sky. Harry flew higher than any of them, squinting around for the snitch. "All right there, Scarhead," yelled Malfoy, shooting underneath him as to show off the new speed of his broom. Harry had no time to reply. At that moment, a heavy black bludger came pelting toward him. He avoided it so narrowly that he felt it ruffle his hair as he passed. "Close one, Harry," said George, streaking past him with a club in his hand, ready to knock the bludger back toward a Slytherin. Harry saw George give the bludger a powerful whack in the direction of Adrian Pusey, but the bludger changed direction again in midair and shot straight for Harry again. Harry dropped quickly to avoid it, and George managed to hit it hard toward Malfoy. Once again, the bludger swerved like a boomerang and shot at Harry's head. Harry put on a burst of speed and zoomed toward the other end of the pitch. He could hear the bludger whistling along behind him. What was going on? Bludgers never concentrated on one player like this. It was their job to try to unseat as many people as possible. Fred Weasley was waiting for the bludger at the other end. Harry ducked as Fred swung at the bludger with all his might. The bludger was knocked off course. "Gotcha," Fred yelled happily, but he was wrong. As though it was magnetically attracted to Harry, the bludger pelted after him once more, and Harry was forced to fly off at full speed. It started to rain. Harry felt heavy drops fall onto his face, splattering onto his glasses. He didn't have a clue what was going on in the rest of the game until he heard Lee Jordan, who was commentating, say, "Slytherin lead, 60 points to zero." By the way, this is one of those things where, like, she obviously makes points based on how dramatic the game is going to be, like whatever she wants, but things generally, like, are not as one-sided as they make. Like, that's six goals, right? 6-0 is pretty strange. Like, in soccer, 6-0 would be a blowout. So, or hockey or something. The Slytherin's superior brooms were clearly doing their jobs, and meanwhile the mad bludger was doing all it could to knock Harry out of the air. Fred and George were now flying so close to him on either side that Harry could see nothing at all except their flailing arms and had no chance to look for the snitch, let alone catch it. "Someone's tampered with this bludger," Fred grunted, swinging his bat with all his might as it launched a new attack on Harry. "We need time out," said George, trying to signal to Wood and stop the bludger from breaking Harry's nose at the same time. Wood had obviously got the message. Madame Hooch's whistle rang out, and Harry, Fred, and George dived for the ground, still trying to avoid the mad bludger. "What's going on?" said Wood, as the Gryffindor team huddled together, while Slytherins in the crowd jeered. "We're being flattened. Fred, George, where were you when that bludger stopped Angelina scoring?" "We were 20 feet above her, stopping the other bludger from murdering Harry, Oliver," said George angrily. "Someone's fixed it. It won't leave Harry alone. It hasn't gone for anyone else all game. The Slytherins must have done something to it." "But the bludgers have been locked in Madam Hooch's office since our last practice, and there was nothing wrong with them then," said Wood anxiously. Madam Hooch was walking toward them. Over her shoulder, Harry could see the Slytherin team jeering and pointing in his direction. "Listen," said Harry, as she came nearer and nearer. "With you two flying around me all the time, the only way I'm going to catch a snitch is if it flies up my sleeve. Go back to the rest of the team and let me deal with the rogue one." "Don't be thick," said Fred. "It'll take your head off." Wood was looking from Harry to the Weasleys. "Oliver, this is insane," said Alicia Spinett angrily. "You can't let Harry deal with that thing on his own. Let's ask for an inquiry." "If we stop now, we'll have to forfeit the match," said Harry, "and we're not losing to Slytherin just because of a crazy bludger. Come on, Oliver, tell him to leave me alone." "This is all your fault," George said angrily to Wood. "Get the snitch or die trying. What a stupid thing to say." Madam Hooch had joined them. "Ready to resume play?" she asked Wood. Wood looked at the determined look on Harry's face. "All right," he said. "Fred, George,
You heard Harry. Leave him alone. Let him deal with the bludger on his own. The rain was falling more heavily now. On Madame Hooch's whistle, Harry kicked hard into the air and heard a telltale whoosh of the bludger behind him. Higher and higher, Harry climbed. He looped and swooped, spiraled, zigzagged, and rolled. Slightly dizzy, he nevertheless kept his eyes wide open. Rain was speckling his glasses and ran up his nostrils as he hung upside down, avoiding another fierce dive from the bludger. He could hear laughter from the crowd. He knew he must look very stupid, but the rogue bludger was heavy and couldn't change directions as quickly as Harry could. He began a kind of roller coaster ride around the edges of the stadium, squinting through the silver sheets of rain to the Gryffindor goalposts, where Adrian Pusey was trying to get past Wood. A whistling in Harry's ear told him the bludger had missed him again. He turned right over and sped in the opposite direction. "Training for a ballet, Potter?" yelled Malfoy as Harry was forced to do a stupid kind of twirl in midair to dodge the bludger. And he fled, the bludger trailing a few feet behind him. And then, glaring back at Malfoy in hatred, he saw it. The golden snitch. It was hovering inches above Malfoy's left ear, and Malfoy, busy laughing at Harry, hadn't seen it. For an agonizing moment, Harry hung in midair, not daring to speed toward Malfoy in case he looked up and saw the snitch. Wham! He stayed still a second too long. The bludger hit him hard at last, smashing into his elbow, and Harry felt his arm break. Dazed by the searing pain in his arm, he slid sideways on his rain-drenched broom, his one knee crooked over it, his right arm dangling useless at his side. The bludger came pelting back for a second attack, this time aiming at his face. Harry swerved out of the way, one idea firmly lodged in his numb brain. Get to Malfoy. Through a haze of rain and pain, he dived for the shimmering, sneering face below him and saw its eyes widen with fear. Malfoy thought Harry was attacking him. "What the..." he gasped, careening out of the way. Harry took the remaining hand off his broom, made a wild snatch. He felt his fingers close on the cold snitch, but now was gripping the broom only with his legs. There was a yell from the crowd as he headed straight for the ground, trying hard not to pass out. With a splattering thud, he hit the mud and rolled off his broom. His arm was hanging at a very strange angle. Riddled with pain, he heard, as though from a distance, a good deal of shouting and whistling. He focused on the snitch clutched in his good hand. "Aha," he said vaguely, "we've won." And he fainted. He came around, rain falling on his face, still lying on the ground, with someone leaning over him. He saw a glitter of teeth. "Oh no, not you," he moaned. "Don't know what he's saying," said Lockhart loudly to the anxious crowd of Gryffindors pressing around them. "Not to worry, Harry, I'm about to fix up your arm." "No," said Harry, "I'll keep it like this, thanks." He tried to sit up, but the pain was terrible. He heard a familiar clicking noise nearby. "I don't want a photo of this, Colin," he said loudly. "Lie back, Harry," said Lockhart soothingly. "It's a simple charm I've used countless times." "Why can't I just go to the hospital wing?" said Harry through clenched teeth. "He really should, Professor," said a muddled Wood, who couldn't help grinning even though his seeker was injured. "Great capture, Harry. Really spectacular. Your best yet, I'd say." Through the thicket of legs around him, Harry spotted Fred and George Weasley wrestling the rogue bludger into a box. He was still putting up a terrific fight. "Stand back," said Lockhart, who was rolling up his jade green sleeves. "No, don't," said Harry weakly, but Lockhart was twirling his wand, and 1 second later had directed it straight toward Harry's arm. A strange and unpleasant sensation started at Harry's shoulder and spread all the way down to his fingertips. It felt as though his arm was being deflated. He didn't dare look at what was happening. He had shut his eyes, his face turned away from the arm, but his worst fears realized as the people above him gasped and Colin Creevy began clicking away madly. His arm didn't hurt anymore, nor did it feel remotely like an arm. "Aha," said Lockhart. "Yes, well, that can happen sometimes. But the point is, the bones are no longer broken. That's the thing to bear in mind. So Harry, just toddle up to the hospital wing. Miss Weasley, Mr. Weasley, Miss Granger, would you escort him? And Madame Pomfrey will be able to tidy him up a bit." As Harry got to his feet, he felt strangely lopsided. Taking a deep breath, he looked down at his right arm. What he saw made him pass out again. Poking out the end of his robes looked like a thick, flesh-colored rubber glove. He tried to move his fingers. Nothing happened. Lockhart hadn't mended Harry's bones. He had removed them. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my sweet kitten boo. And I hope you have a good night and sweet dreams. I love you, beautiful girl. Good night.